Okay, good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled March 1st meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed two student personnel issues, one item of anticipated litigation. We conferred with our labor negotiators and reviewed one personnel issue. So I will be looking for action on the student personnel items. Oh, consensus. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. We have
so now we're going to
student A and student B.
I would make a motion to accept the recommendation, a stipulated student discipline agreement with regard to student A.
I'll second.
Okay, and this is a roll call vote?
No.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0. So I'll entertain a motion on student B.
I move to accept the I move to accept the stipulated expulsion agreement for student B.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Quessenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0 as well. Approval of the minutes of the meeting of February 16th. Is there?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0. Okay, then moving on, we have student representatives to the board. We have Riley Perano, close, and Ellie Fryer from Morro Bay High School, and Bella Stanvall from San Luis Obispo High School. Let's start with Morro Bay.
All right. Can you guys hear me? Okay, good. So we're working on an ASB. Making Mock Rock a hit once again. So in previous years, we haven't had all the attention of students as we would want to attend the Mock Rock. So we're going to perform a mini Mock Rock during an assembly. And we're going to try and promote students and get them to bring their parents to the actual Mock Rock that's going to be held in Morro Bay. And so the Mock Rock is just something for us to get the community involved in, bring back like Morro Bay High School spirit, and get a lot of different groups of people involved. And so right now we're on a roll, and we have a dodgeball tournament going on. We have 16 teams, and we all go into the old gym, and we watch them play with music, and we have great announcers, and we have some momentum rolling with that. We have a lot of students involved. The bleachers are always filled up, and there's still people standing on the sidelines to watch that, and we were in our second day of playing dodgeball, so we're going to try and keep the momentum going with Mock Rock. And then we also have a neon dance that's going to be coming up. Okay. And then, so we're going to be working on our neon dance, which is our biggest and most popular dance of the year. And we're going to try and get as many people as we can to go so we can start getting more people involved with going to these dances and being a part of, like, a community and going as one school. So, yeah.
Our spring sports have also started, so a lot of our teams begin their competitions this year, including boys golf, boys volleyball, swimming and diving, boys tennis, softball, track and field, and baseball, and everyone's really excited for that to begin. Also, we have 10 teachers that will be going to San Diego next week, spending 3 days to learn about project-based learning at High Tech High, which we're also very excited for. And then another big thing for our ASB, at least, is we will be going to visit the LOMS, Los Osos Middle School ASB students to try and recruit some new freshmen and to just answer any questions that they have to kind of bring up their confidence entering high school this next school year. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Bella.
Hello. So going on at San Luis Obispo High School campus recently, last Friday we had our second open mic of the year, which was very awesome. It was all outdoor with an outdoor stage out on what we call Tiger Lane. We brought in burrito vendors from Tacos de Santa Cruz, which was very popular. We had about a couple hundred kids stay up on campus. We had live music, spoken word poetry, also some dancers, which was very cool. So it was a very interesting show, along with like some really incredible talent that we have at our school, especially music-wise. We have some really incredible musicians that showcase themselves. Also, we had our final study night. Right now, Sol High is in the middle of their finals week, which is always a great time. We had a final study night. It was our first study night, actually, that we've hosted as a school yesterday night. Ms. Sawyer, our librarian, put that together. The pizza and hot chocolate that was there was funded by the Black and Gold Boosters, which was really awesome. But I was there. There were about a couple hundred kids in our library. Cal Poly tutors from every subject there to help out students with whatever subject they needed. I got a lot out of it. I know all the other students did. There were collaborations going on in different groups working within their classes with teachers there as well to help out. So that's something that I think is going to get even bigger moving forward because we haven't had something like that before, and I think it was very successful. There were students asking for it every single night of finals week because it was so helpful. Also, all of our CIF sports right now, actually, right down there, our girls' soccer team is competing in CIF. As far as the last text message I got, it was 0-0. It's still 0-0, as you can see out the window. You're right there on our home ground. So cross your fingers for us, because it's the semifinals, and our girls have been working so hard. They've been undefeated all season, so that's been really exciting for us. It's been a long time since our girls' soccer team has gone that far, so there is an enormous amount of pride going on campus for our girls' soccer team right now. They've been getting a lot of well-deserved recognition. Also, we had FFA week last week, so our FFA program at our school is nationally ranked. It's awesome. Our teachers are awesome. Our students are awesome. So the FFA put on this whole week in recognition of their efforts, also trying to make sure that students knew exactly what FFA was about. So that was a really great time for everyone involved. We have our mock rock coming up, which is a half mock rock, half talent show, and that was a really successful event last year. So we're putting in the middle of putting that on right now. And also at our school, actually, this past weekend, we had a student who took their own life that past weekend, so it has really cast a pretty sort of sullen haze on our campus for the past couple of days. It started some pretty important conversations between students and staff, and as well as students and other teachers on campus, which I think is really important. But if you have any sort of good energy or positive thoughts that you can send towards the family involved, I know that our entire school and our community would really appreciate it, as it is a hard time for a lot of our students. He was a very active member in band, and the band community is a very, very strong, knit, close community. So if you could send any sort of positive thoughts their way, I know our school would really appreciate it. And that's what's going on at Sol High this week. Thank you.
Well, thank you all. It's always a pleasure to have you come. You're welcome to stay if you'd like and listen to our agenda items. We value your input. We're also mindful that you have other things that you need to do. So if you'd like to leave, cut out any time you want to. And thank you very much for joining us tonight. Okay. Did anyone? Okay. So we move on to the Teach Foundation Grant Awards with Terry Main from the Teach Foundation.
Good evening. I'm back again. It's been a year since we've been here. I can't even believe it's been a year. We did not have a fall grant cycle. There were many reasons for that, but we probably will have a fall grant cycle again this year, so you'll see us back sooner than an entire year. So in keeping with the tradition, we have a number of teachers who have agreed to come tonight to tell you about their grants. We're very proud that we've awarded 21 grants in the amount of $14,545. And we just are so happy to be able to support those great efforts being made in the classroom. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Andrea and Terry and Michelle to tell you about their author visits.
Hi, I'm Terry Wright. I'm the library tech from Del Mar, and thanks to the Teach Foundation, we're having an author this week, author-illustrator Marianne Frazier. We're really excited about.
And my name is Michelle Hedrick. I'm the library tech from Hawthorne Elementary. We are also having an author visit this week with Marianne Frazier. She's also coming for an evening program on Thursday night, which you are all invited to, 6:30 to 8 at Hawthorne.
Hi, I'm Andrea Edgington, and I'm the library tech at Baywood Elementary School. And on March 17th, we have Greg Trine coming for a school assembly and then back that evening for our family read-aloud night, and our kids and families are really excited.
So since tomorrow is Dr. Seuss's birthday and all our schools are celebrating Read Across America, we thought we'd give a Dr. Seussy thank you. Our deepest thanks to the Teach Foundation tonight for bringing these authors who know how to write. Their books inspire students to publish their own opinions, how-tos, and small moments they've known.
These guest authors will be sure to inspire, encouraging students to always reach higher, to read more and write from the heart. Your generosity will be playing a part.
As you support students exploring their dreams, we hope that you know how much this means. From Del Mar, Baywood, and Hawthorne School, we're humbled and grateful for all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sunshine Frawley. I teach transitional kindergarten at Monarch Grove. My grant was for a dramatic play enhancement for a doctor hospital kind of theme, and I'm grateful to the Teach Foundation for understanding that when kids are playing in dramatic play area, when young children are there, they're not just playing, but they're learning as well. And I'm also grateful, I need to have a shout out to Sharon Haupt at the IMC. Instead of keeping all these materials for my own classroom, I'm going to send them all off to the IMC, and she's going to set it up so we can check them out to all our early learning team classrooms. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gail Becker, and this is Katie Peters. We're fourth grade teachers at Sin Summer Elementary. And in fourth grade, California history is one of our guiding lovely part of what we get to teach. And so what we ask the Teach Foundation for, and we are very grateful for, is money to pay for a mission tile that the students get to take home. And so they make it, and we display it at open house, and then the parents keep it. Past students of mine, and Katie's daughter being one of them, they still have them on a special spot on their bookcases at home.
And the money that the Teach Grant gave us went to hiring Bonnie Johnson, who's the art teacher. We wouldn't be able to pull that off. Also buying the tiles, the glaze, and all the materials that we need. So we're really appreciative of the Teach Grant, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Eric Benitez. I'm a teacher at Laguna Middle School. And I want to say thank you to the Teach Foundation for giving us this grant. This money is going to help us, our kids, to publish a book. We have over 400 students in pairs, working in pairs to publish a book in different subjects. My seventh grade class is going to be writing this book in English and in Spanish about tolerance. And my eighth grade class is working on different times in U.S. history. The rest of the classes, seventh grade classes, are working on medieval times. So by the end, hopefully, we publish about 250 books, which we're going to donate to the library that can be used for research later on. So the kids are excited that they're going to be published, and their names are going to be on the works cited when someone does research in those books. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Jessica Hoffman, and I teach 8th grade science at Laguna Middle School. I just wanted to say thank you for this TEACH grant. It's used for the physics energy car equipment. The equipment is a car and the supporting materials that our students use to complete physics labs related to speed, velocity, acceleration, momentum, and collisions. Right now we have two sets of the equipment that we use in 8th grade science labs, but we face some limitations because we end up with excessively large student groups when they use the cars, which is not really desirable because you have some students who are kind of left just watching instead of being able to participate. So adding an extra energy car equipment set is very helpful to the students because it allows for smaller groups and it gives more students the opportunity to manipulate the variables and collect data. And these cars are used by all 8th grade science teachers in the science department, so it benefits all the teachers in 8th grade, it benefits all the students, so we're very grateful to get another set of the car equipment that we already have found to be very valuable for student use. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Nina Robinette. This is Caroline Pedersen. We are both 6th grade teachers at Los Osos Middle School, and a big part of the 6th grade program there is our STEAM program. And with our STEAM program, we focus a lot on the design process, as well as practicing 21st century skills like collaboration and using creativity. So in the spring, we spend a month on a culmination unit where students employ the skills that they've learned throughout the year, as well as their knowledge of the design cycle. So Caroline and I have planned a culinary design unit, which Caroline will tell you a little bit more about.
We are going to teach them, first of all, how to use the measuring tools in the kitchen, but then also we'll do practice runs with them with cookies and cupcakes, and then in the end they will use the design cycle process to create their own final
culinary
masterpiece. Yeah. And that's it. So thank you very much to the Teach Foundation.
Thank you. Hi, folks. Thanks again to the Teach Foundation for the, I don't know how many different people are going to say that, but anyway, I do appreciate that very much. The idea behind this grant proposal for Los Osos Middle School was one that engages students in particularly problem solving a community issue has to do with nitrate pollution in the water system. And it's called TOPS, Tethered Observation Platform for Science, and boils down to using a tethered drone, and it's tethered by an electrical wire so that the battery source is on the ground, but the drone is up above, and it can't be any higher than 400 feet by FAA rules. But basically, it boils down to using an infrared camera and then thermography to interpret the nitrates that are in the existing plant structure and the ecosystem in the bay. And so the students themselves are going to be interpreting that data. They're going to be creating, constructing, and reverse engineering those drones. Quadcopters is the initial thing we're going to use. But the idea is to have a practical application, something that has a project that is going to aid in the solution, perhaps, for our community. Wonderful. So anyway, that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hi. My name's Steve Gady, and I'd just really like to stress how much we teachers rely on the Teach Foundation to fund these projects. I mean, if you look at that, that's a lot of money coming into the district and supporting teachers directly for ideas that they have. This year, we are going to start an aquaponics project, and aquaponics is a... It's an ecosystem that you build where nutrients are cycled between fish and plants. And it's a model of larger ecosystems, but it's also a model of sustainable agriculture where nutrients are cycled instead of treated as waste products. There's a combination of engineering design and classical biology that kind of mesh together. And it's going to be run on a business model where the initial outlay and expenses, hopefully, is going to be taken care of by this $1,000. And then after that, sales of the products will be able to take care of the operations and maintenance cost over time.
Hi, I'm Peggy Flynn. I'm from Morro Bay High School as well. And like Steve, we're doing project-based learning at Morro Bay, and we're doing a project called Pirate Food Chickens, where we've been raising a flock of birds on the school, and the students are getting real-world experience raising these birds and getting knowledge of nutrition, anatomy, those kinds of things as we raise the birds. And then the area that we raise the birds in is going to then be used to grow vegetables in and produce, and they'll get to use that for their biology part of it, use that project to start learning about photosynthesis and cellular respiration, those kinds of things. But the other part of it that we're real excited is it's a real-world experience for them, because the students take it on as an entrepreneurship project, and they use the collect the produce, collect the eggs, and then sell it, and they use that to kind of help fund the project. So the money, like Steve said, that we're getting right now is being used to help build the structure that we need to keep the project going and raise new birds to replace the ones that we have in our flock currently. So thank you.
Good evening. I'm Tom Weinschenk from San Luis Obispo High School, and I was lucky enough to receive $500 for our delegation to the California Junior Classical League Convention. We are taking 35 students to the convention March 18th and 19th down in Irvine, California. It's a wonderful event where over 1,400 students from all over California compete in things related to Latin, various events such as various academic events, dramatic interpretation, creative arts, visual arts, even athletics. And it's a lot of fun, and it gets our students really excited about Latin and goes way beyond the classroom, and they're very, very excited about it. I really want to thank the Teach Foundation. They've been doing this since 2001, and I have benefited, and my Latin students, for many, many years from Terry Main and her tremendous work. So again, thank you so much, Terry, and thank you, Board, for supporting all we do.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having me here today. Again, on behalf of the students in my fourth grade class at Bishop's Peak, I'm just here to say thank you to the Teach Foundation for granting us access to a really amazing keyboarding program that we're really going to be able to use to hone our skills with successful and efficient, we really want to refine our keyboarding skills in my class. There's a lot of assessment and curriculum that we're starting to use our keyboarding and typing every day, so I'm really happy to have that for them. We believe that typing skills are more relevant now than ever, and so we're really anxious to reach our highest potential as writers and communicators with our new skills. Also, my coworker Lauren was not able to be here tonight because her daughter's sick, but she wrote something, and I'd like to share it with you if that's okay. Students in room 23 at Bishop's Peak are extremely grateful for their Teach Grant. This grant will continue to give us access to the online website RAS Kids, where students can practice reading at their just right level while practicing fluency and comprehension in our computer lab and at home. This year, Lauren writes, I will also be able to purchase subscriptions to Vocabulary A through Z and Science A through Z. These additional resources will be invaluable, as there are current limited resources available for teachers using next generation science standards. And she thanks you very much for that. So, thank you.
Okay, I guess those presentations kind of tell us all why we keep doing this, because that's pretty darn amazing, and I applaud all of you so much for what you do in the classroom. So thanks for having us, and we'll see you again in the fall. Okay? Good night.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Terry?
Yes.
I think that we all should give you a round of applause. So thank you for all you do.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming tonight. And then I think we need a soccer update. I heard a roar. Oh, it's still 0-0. Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Okay. Moving on to item 6.1 is correspondence. At the time the agenda was published, no correspondence had been received. Does anyone have anything to add to that? Yeah, but that was after the agenda was published. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to public comment. Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers, have you received any requests to speak? Is there anyone here who would like to address the board during public comment, but who did not fill out a request form? This is your opportunity. Okay, seeing no one, then we'll close public comment and move on to item 7.1, the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, two just really quick things. One, I don't know if the board knows, but with the Affordable Care Act requirements that are being put in place right now throughout the nation, there's a lot of basically requirements in terms of offering insurance and tracking and W-2s now and IRS, those types of things. So the payroll staff as well as our personnel department have been working overtime, I would say, to make sure that we get everything in place so that we meet all of those expectations that we need to. And so I will be coming back to the board after we've gone through this year's cycle of just insurance and care and those types of things, because there are some specific requirements that we have to meet. So, for example, this year you have to ensure that you offer at least 70% of your staff health care insurance and affordable health care insurance. And so next year that number jumps up to 95%. So there are some employees potentially that may fall through the cracks because they sub and they do part-time assignments, those types of things. So we're definitely, and again, that's where payroll and personnel really working hard to track and go through that process. But there may be some things that we, as a district, may want to change in terms of that once we have the total information, once we see where we're at. But I'll bring back kind of a report to explain what's happening with that process, because there are fines that can be assessed districts if they don't offer affordable coverage. CISC has been really good about providing a really low-cost kind of catastrophic plan that we could offer to all employees if we choose to. So that'll just be something I'll update the board and kind of bring you more information on as we finish this year and we kind of see where we're at with those numbers. The second thing is we do have our annual update through CISC. They're going to be here on March 9th at 10:30, and so this is where CISC comes, who is our health benefits group, basically where we get our benefits through. And so they will be here to kind of give their annual update on benefits, where we're at, where things are going to happen for next year. We are looking at about a 5 to 9% increase, which is probably throughout the state. Industry average is happening. And so, again, those are things that we'll talk a little bit about tonight as we review the seven-year budget. So we'll get that information from CISC on the 9th, and then we basically take that information and we get together with all of our union groups, so with CSEA, SEIU, SLCTA, and we'll look at the plans and make adjustments where it's really a great group. We work together to kind of do and what's best for employees so that we definitely have a range of options for people, and especially with increased costs. So not only does that impact the district, those increased costs, because we have a 5,000 and 50-50, but it also affects the employees. So it's good to get everybody's kind of opinions as we go forward and as we set plans and establish what those rates are going to be for next year.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Questenberry.
So on this March 9th meeting with the CISC, you mentioned employee groups. Are they invited?
Yes, they are.
They are. Okay.
Absolutely.
So, okay, great. And the other question I had is relatively new, and you may not have an answer, but I was wondering about it. The state just passed, I guess it would be a tax on insurance companies, in particular medical insurance companies. This is, I guess, allows them to access additional federal funds. Do you know anything about that yet?
No.
Okay.
All right. I haven't heard about that.
Okay. Any other comment?
And that's this meeting, just so that everybody, it's a countywide meeting. So everyone comes, and it's held right here at J2. But definitely, there's union groups throughout the county that come as well for the other school districts.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any additional comments, so we'll move on to the Ed Services update. Mr. Robinette.
Yeah, just a couple things. We are still in the middle of our outreach to our stakeholders for our local control accountability plan. So Mr. Pinkerton, Ms. Newland, and I are pretty much wrapping up at the school sites. We have some to finish up this week and next week. And then I will also be going to the District English Language Advisory Committee this Thursday night to get some feedback from that group. Dr. Prater and some members of our board finished talking to all of our secondary, well, I shouldn't say all of them, but representatives from all of our secondary schools. Our three high schools and middle schools last week and the week before were interviewed about their interests for the school district and their hopes and dreams for our school district. So that's going on. Yesterday began what we call open enrollment period in San Luis Coastal, which is when families who choose to go to a school other than their school of residency, they have that opportunity to make those requests known. They're not necessarily always honored because it depends on room at the local school sites, but it also kicks in our need for lotteries, which we sometimes have to do for slots in schools. And so that takes place over the next 4 weeks. It's also the time period where we encourage most people to sign up for transitional kindergarten and kindergarten. That helps us know a lot more about our enrollment projections for the following year. It's also the end of the second trimester of school, believe it or not, already. As Bella said, finals are happening at San Luis Obispo High School on their trimester system, but our elementary schools also have conference week next week as they finish their second trimester. And I do want to make sure our employees and our board knows that beginning this week and next week, we have our annual health screening that's provided from our insurance company, and so it's any employee or any dependents 18 years and older are able to come get cholesterol, blood pressure, glucose tests, and just for showing up, you get a nice little gift card. We have found that this saves money over time to get people early screening. So that is happening at various school sites beginning this week.
Thank you. Any comments? Seeing none, we will move on to the Measure D update. Back to you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just to inform the board, next Friday is actually not this Friday, but the following Friday, March 11th, we have our next bond oversight, or not bond oversight, our Measure D study session, I should say. And so kind of on the docket for this will be really to bring the board up to date with where we're at with all of our project status up to this point. You know, we're have some key timelines hitting us pretty soon in terms of the pool at Morro Bay. We got some information from the city now about that project going forward with the Planning Commission. So I think we're going to actually hopefully cross our fingers, be able to get our first groundbreaking ceremony set up and established. So that'll be exciting, as well as, again, just a whole plethora of projects that we have planned. So it's really time to update the board on where we're at with those and bring you up to speed. And then we'll also be talking about district standards. So we'll have Rick Stimson, as well as Mr. Holcomb, coming in and kind of bringing the board through kind of the process of why you develop district standards, what they are, how that works, and how that fits into the process of bidding and our design build delivery method, those types of things, and how critical that is. So we'll be discussing both of those.
Okay. I don't see any additional comments, so thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We'll move on to item 8.1, is a resolution, positive certificate of adequate funding for the second interim. Mrs. Lang.
Good evening. There seems to be a theme tonight about how fast time is going by, and I feel like I was just here reporting first interim to you. Doesn't it feel like that?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is our second interim report, which reports our financial status as of January 31st. And we will go through and we'll compare where we are now compared to where we were at first interim and what the changes were to the ending balance. We'll go through the LCFF versus basic aid graph and then some things to keep in mind, and then Ryan's going to go over the seven-year budget. Kim, could you open the PowerPoint on there? So we have made adjustments, obviously, to the budget. Our property taxes and LCFF has actually decreased a little bit because we're continuing to pay more and more to Bellevue Santa Fe. Their enrollment and their ADA is going to be up this year, so we're projecting that we're going to pay more of our property taxes to them. I guess it's all of our property taxes, really. Our federal revenues are down a little bit, and that's just some adjustments to entitlements for Title I and for our federal special ed. And state revenues are up mainly because of, is it not working? Yeah. Anyway, state, I'll just continue going on. Do you have it on your computers or, okay. State revenues are up a little bit because of our lottery funding. We did a, as you may know, the state continued paying us for adult ed and ROP ADA, even though we weren't reporting it since 12-13, and they decided they were going to quit doing that. And because we had such a big adult ed program, our funding went down a little bit with that adjustment. There we go. Thank you. Perfect. And local revenues went up substantially. We received grants, new CTE grants, for over $400,000. And we've also received a new bus grant, so that's in there. And then our other local revenues go up as we receive them. As you can see, our certificated salary, classified salary, and benefits all also went up. That's because of the 2% raise and other adjustments that we've made there. The biggest difference here in operations and supplies, the books and supplies and operations and supplies is, went up partly because of these new grants that we got. Operations also went up. We re-evaluated our utilities and decided that we had under-budgeted our electricity. We get that true up at the end of the year. We used to. Now it's all standardized throughout the year. It's going to make it much easier for us to budget. We won't have this surprise bill at the end of the year. And so you can see that our total revenues, well, I skipped capital outlay. Capital outlay is almost entirely vehicles that we've purchased, so we're replacing our vehicle fleet. So that's what that increase is. So our total revenues went up by about $820,000, and our total expenses went up by about $2.5 million, which if you, that leaves a net change to our ending balance of about $1.7 million decrease. And this is a list of the reasons for the decrease. Most of them are because of the salary and benefit and the utilities, and we did some other adjustments as we needed to. Okay, next. Okay, this graph I think you're familiar with. It shows the difference between what we receive as a basic aid district compared to what we would receive if we were an LCFF district. So the blue line is basic aid, and this is assuming a 2% property tax increase. So that's pretty conservative. We'll probably get more than a 2% property tax increase. The LCFF target is the red line, so this is what the state hopes to someday fund fully. And then the green line is what they're currently funding, based on the gap funding rate. So you can see that in 13-14 there was about a $17 million difference between being our basic aid status and being our gap funded LCFF status. And by 18-19 that's going to drop to about $7 million. So as they keep funding that gap, we're going to get closer and closer. However, because we're only anticipating or we're only budgeting in this 2% property tax increases. That's pretty conservative, so that'll probably increase that gap a little bit. So then the next page is just some things that we need to keep in mind, and one of those is that we are only budgeting or projecting 2% property tax increases. We anticipate that those will be quite a bit higher than that. As you know, Diablo Canyon contributes about $10 million of our property taxes, so we're actually, that gap is less than just the property taxes we get from Diablo Canyon at this point. As a basic aid district, we also receive about $1.4 million in Prop 30 EPA funds and over $3 million from the fair share from the categorical funds, which if we did drop out of basic aid, we would lose all that money. So that would be about a $4.4 million hit to our property taxes, less what we pay to Bellevue Santa Fe. Our salary and benefits, even with the raise, we're still at about 85% of revenues, so that's good. That's about where we want to be. But something else we need to keep in mind is that our Fund 20, other post-employment benefits, has a balance right now of about $9.1 million. Our latest actuarial puts our unfunded balance at about $16 million, so we'll have to continue keeping that in mind and trying to fund that when we can.
So as the board knows,
Ms. Stronger.
So in regards to the Prop 30 funding, the $1.4 million we get, if Prop 30 isn't renewed, which I think is the, there are folks putting a renewal of that on the November ballot, would we lose that $1.4 million?
So yeah, we're actually going to see that next in the seven-year budget. I think it's 18-19 school year is the last year we would receive the Prop 30 dollars. So if it's not renewed, that would be the last year that those funds would come to us. And so because we're a basic aid school district, as Julie kind of talked about at the end of her presentation, we receive those EPA funds, and we receive our categorical fair share funds. So for other school districts, those are part of their LCFF. So the hit of the Diablo Canyon issue dropping out of basic aid status is that not only would we lose those property tax dollars, but we would also lose those other funds that we receive. So it's a bigger hit than just the LCFF is kind of what I wanted Julie to make sure people understood in terms of our overall budget. Now, again, when you look at the second interim, we have the new revenue sources that Julie talked about. The second interim assumes that we're going to spend every one of those dollars. So that we're going to spend everything that in terms of what we've budgeted. So what we know in the past is that's not the case. So that's why we've put together kind of this reality seven-year budget projection in terms of our taxes. And as we get the real numbers, we, of course, put the real numbers into this projection. So if at the top, 14-15, 15-16, those are unaudited actuals. That's exactly what the district took in. Julie knows kind of what our categorical dollars. So for 15-16, those numbers, our property taxes are in. So as we get the real information. But other than that, like we're still collecting rentals from our leases. So as we get those dollars, as that amount either changes, goes up or down, or we get a new bus grant, or we get the CTE grant, we make those adjustments both in our revenues. Now, we don't always put all of that towards expenditures. And so we do kind of take an average of what we've spent in the past with expenditures. And what that does is it gives us a more realistic budget number at the bottom line. So if you go all the way down to the other side, because really it's a bottom line discussion, I would say, in terms of revenues and expenditures. And so Julie said, the positive thing I would say to the, at where we're at right now as a district is that we're at that 85% personnel ratio. About 3 or 4 years back, we had school services come in, did a big budget review with us, talk about best practices, where we need to be. And so that 85% is basically their recommendation, right? Because then you have money to buy books and you have money to help with your schools and do all the things you need to do outside of that. So what we know, however, on top of that is that the yellow lines, and why we've highlighted those in particular is because those are the added compensation that the district has been, has to do for employees in retirement, as well as future health care benefits. So the STRS amount is going to increase dramatically. And again, every time we do this budget presentation, I go through it again, because I can't overemphasize what effect that is going to have on our personnel costs over the next 5 to 6 years. So every single one of our current employees, if we did nothing, if we added no other raises, did anything at all, every single employee is going to cost 10% more over the next 5 years because of the district's increased contribution towards either STRS or PERS. So, and that's the red number at the bottom line, because that affects the overall balance of what we talked about with those personnel costs. And so STRS and PERS, health and welfare as well. Health and welfare is a tough one, because not only does the district's contribution jump up from, I think it's $6 million to $8 million during that time period, but it's also employees. Because it's the 50-50 share, they also, it affects their check as well as the district. So it's an add-in burden. Next year for STRS, in particular for our certificate employees, again, they're going to see their STRS contribution go up 1% more, and then it's capped at that year. But so these are real effects in terms of, I think, in talking with our employees, it's important to make sure everyone understands what the impacts are and how this affects the district's bottom line. So Julie talked about, in this graph, 16-17 on is only a 2% increase. So it's a conservative property tax increase that we've built into the projection. But if you look at our current balance of potentially a $1.8 million deficit next year, again, based on our revenues from the past, our expenditures as projected, what we've done. So if we get that 5% increase in property taxes, that basically will just mean our revenues and expenses are even. We won't have a deficit next year if we get those increases, which means that we won't have given any increase in salary to any of our union groups for that year. So that, I mean, these are real critical, tough decisions. And then the other thing, too, every district in the state of California is facing the same issue. So every district is facing the STRS and PERS dilemma. Every district is facing the healthcare issue with their employees. So those are just critical components in why they're highlighted. The green on both revenues, and I talked about this in the fall with first interim, the green is basically the state's portion of STRS that they put forward. So as part of the Retirement Act and showing the public kind of what the state puts out towards retirements, they have made us put those numbers into our overall budget, so they're in the projection. But basically, it's revenues. It's a wash, revenues, expenditures. So in order to maintain that 85% amount and stay in that realm, those are things that we're going to have to, again, look at. You know, I would say, so every deficit, every dollar we give is something that we're going to have to look at. How can we deal with that in terms of personnel? Because out of every dollar, 85 cents goes towards people. So as we look in the future, those are the things that, you know, the board, our union groups, the district office, we really have to do whatever we can to keep that number in line. Because when it creeped up to 92% a few years ago, so when we had to do layoffs and those type, we never want to go down that road. So staying in that zone and ensuring that we're doing, I think, the best job of educating students as well, and keeping that at the forefront of, you know, of what we do, I think, as a school district is important. So again, this is kind of the more projection. So, I mean, even though the second interim shows us having this negative spending over $2 million, we're thinking we're going to be about an $800,000 surplus for this year. That doesn't make up for the $4.5 million deficit last year, if you look at our overall bottom line. So, but it's a better place. But again, even for next year, and we don't know property taxes until November, we're looking at a deficited amount, and of course it just grows exponentially if we don't do something about it, or if property values aren't as good as we hope that they will be. So I do feel good about 16-17. right now in terms of what we're hearing in the news and about property values, and I do think we'll be close to that amount, the 5% amount that we've discussed. So we'll see how that pans out. I think we are going to get a little bit of one-time money this year that the governor's talked about, so that'll be a positive thing, which will help that bottom line. And so we'll just have to see how the economy goes and how the state's doing in terms of whether that will continue or whether those one-time dollars will dry up eventually.
Questions, anyone? Okay, I have a question. Mr. Pinkerton, given what you've told us tonight, when would you anticipate it might be possible, or will it be possible, to make additional contributions to our GASB fund, our post-retirement
Well, basically, so what we put in the seven-year projection is basically just leaving it at the stable place. So for every, you know, basically paying the $1 million out each year and then putting $1 million in. So that's what the budget projection has. So it basically just maintains our level or remains our current $9 million level in that account. It doesn't help it. It doesn't get us to that $16 million place. Based on the projections that we're seeing in terms of STIRS and PERS and health benefits, I can't imagine being able to potentially increase
funding
while we have other, you know, personnel issues, and again keeping the kids first and, you know, looking at the classroom and those types of things. I think that's going to be a tough thing to be able to do.
So you would anticipate it's just going to hold steady as currently funded?
I would.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Quisenberry.
You can help clarify something for me, though. That particular fund is to fund post-retirement benefits.
Yes.
Which basically in this district terminate at 65.
Yes.
So once a retired teacher, administrator, custodian hits that age, those people go on to
Medicare
and whatever their supplemental insurance that they can purchase. Is that correct?
Yes. Right,
thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Pinkerton. But you may be back up. I don't know. Oh, is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item, the seven-year budget projection?
No, it's a resolution. I was going to move for the resolution.
Oh, so it is. It's a resolution, Mrs. Holmes.
Yes, and I will be happy to take the role if someone would make a motion.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mrs. Sheffer, and a roll call vote.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers?
Yes.
And Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Passes 6-0 with one absence.
Okay, and then we have item 8.02, the Johnson Avenue lot line adjustment. Mr. Palazzo.
Yeah, good evening. It's a little unique to be here with an audience. Usually I'm the last one, and everyone clears the room when the architect facilities director comes up the stage. So what you have in front of you this evening is kind of a leftover, if you will, from the Johnson property development project. As many of you know, the district entered into kind of a preliminary process to investigate and move forward a housing development project on the Johnson Street property that the district owns. As we all know, that project was basically shelved and put aside, and no intent of kind of moving forward with it in the near future was made. But one of the things that was left over from that effort and that preliminary effort through the city entitlements process was some lot line adjustments. And the district discovered that there was a lot of underlying lot lines that were kind of just messy, if you will, for lack of a better term. And so one of the efforts that we were able to salvage out of that process was kind of realigning the lot lines for if we ever decided to move forward with another type of project, sell the property, trade the property, do something with that property, this will make it much easier for us to do those things. Or if we needed to get separate utility services to those properties, this will help us do that in the future. And again, the effort was already there. We were on the 1-yard line. All we needed to do was punch it in. And so tonight we're hopefully going to run one right up the middle and punch this in and adjust the lot lines that are on our Johnson property site, as well as our district office and portions of San Luis High. There's, again, when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, they somehow laid out a lot of different property lines underneath of our existing property lines, and so this effort will help clean a lot of those up. So tonight we're asking for approval to move forward with this. It'll allow us to sign the resolution and move forward with the adjustment of the property lines at the city, as well as in recording it at the county.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Any board members? Mr. Unger.
I was just going to move approval of resolution 11-15-16.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Quesenberry. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Passes 6-0 with one absence.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Item 9.01, the STEAM program update.
Good evening.
Hello.
So I'm here tonight with Dr. Kyle Pruitt from Morro Bay High School, as well as many supporting cast members behind us, that we're happy to share with you tonight some of the STEAM updates that have been happening within our district. So you've heard quite a bit about Los Osos Middle School STEAM program, and so we're going to not emphasize that one tonight, but instead start with the transition that's happening for our Los Osos students headed to Morro Bay High School, and then give you a short update on the other secondary sites, as well as Amy Shields will come up to give you some updates on STEAM happenings at the elementary sites, and then we'll end with any questions or comments at the end. So I will hand it over to Dr. Kyle Pruitt.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Prater, Mr. Pinkerton, Mr. Robinette, trustees, for having me tonight. Excited once again to be here, and number one, to thank you for your support and continued support of project-based learning and STEAM education for kids. It's been an incredible journey for me, so thank you. We have some key points that I wanted to highlight so that I could bring everybody up to speed. As many of you know, our current eighth graders are registering literally as we speak to become ninth graders in high school and come to Morro Bay High School, which is an exciting time for them. It's also our responsibility to ensure that the wonderful things that are happening at LOMS continue at Morro Bay High School. So to take us back to last year, High Tech High School and PBL, as many of you know, when I arrived at Morro Bay High School last fall, we established a STEAM team, a group of teachers that met every other day for an hour each day to discuss how we would accomplish this task and how we would transition these kids into a rigorous program at a comprehensive high school around STEAM. And we came up with many, many, many ideas, but some foundational ideas, and those being interdisciplinary education, project-based learning, 21st century skills, which we've talked about before, and also a focus on the implementation of the Common Core. And when we landed on those four focus areas, we started intensely getting ready as a staff in the training area in those areas. So this year, myself, Sean Allstott, who will join us here in just a moment, Kelly Thornton and Ryan Memorella, traveled down to High Tech High School in San Diego in the fall, worked with many, many high schools to collaborate and actually see what project-based learning looks like in a comprehensive high school and to glean many ideas from them, as many as we could. Just recently in February, the beginning of February, we were lucky enough to have our High Tech High coaches, Randy and Mark, come to us from High Tech High, and we voluntarily had 18 teachers who said, yes, I want to be a part of that training with Morro Bay High. Spent 2 days with those two trainers to talk about what it might look like at Morro Bay. It was wonderful to have them at our site so they could see what we had to work with and continue the training with the teachers. Next week, we will have 10 teachers traveling back down to High Tech High School so that they could see for their own eyes if their ideas match what's going on at High Tech High and some further explore what we could be doing at our site. Google Classroom and Google Sites, it's incredibly important that we continue
continue the platform that's been established by Mr. Illig at Los Angeles Middle School in our STEAM program, kids working in a paperless environment with Google Sites and Google Classroom. March 1st was actually the date, and Mr. Alsop can give me the exact number, but I'm pretty sure it's around 39 of our 46 teachers currently have an active Google website and are working in Google Classroom. That was important to us so that the kids can continue to see a familiar format that they've had at Los Osos Middle School. Regarding devices, next year every ninth grader, regardless if it's an elective or core class, will have a device in their classroom that they will have access. We are very proud of that at Morro Bay. So we thank you for your support. We thank you for the support of Ms. Kim McGrath and the work of Sean Alstott in working on a strategic plan to make sure that our ninth graders have devices to use at our school site. Regarding communication, we've done a ton of communication. I've been doing a Friday update to my site regarding STEAM STEM and our progress in that area. As of 2 weeks ago, I started to include the current eighth grade parents in the high school newsletter. That was a suggestion from Mr. Andre Illig. It was a wonderful suggestion. I took his suggestion, and now we are forwarding our newsletter, high school newsletter, to those eighth grade parents. I've also created a feature in my newsletter just for the eighth grade parents to talk about that transition. So we're excited about that. Mr. Illig and I also have planned a dual principals coffee, which is coming up in the month of March, where I will travel to Loams, and we will answer and field questions for those eighth grade parents and talk about the transitional skills going from eighth grade to ninth grade. I will be attending some PTO meetings and answering questions. And then we have our regular, what I call regular, ninth grade orientation night. It's run by our counselors, but if my counselors, wonderful counselors, were here, they would tell you it's a little bit different because it's got strategic messages around STEAM, STEM, and what's going to look different. We have a slide in just a minute that will reference a day in the life of a ninth grader next year, which I think you'll enjoy. At Loams, again, under Mr. Illig's leadership, the kids have a wonderful opportunity to take a STEAM elective from some very talented teachers. We are excited about the fact that when they land at Morro Bay High School, those opportunities just explode. We have incredible career and college pathways, many, many elective choices. We have some strategic additions in the area of robotics and coding and engineering that we've added to our program that the ninth graders will be able to take advantage of. And one of the things that we're very proud of is that when we visited High Tech High and had them visit, they are actually trying to explore how to get a music program started at their school. And I said, wow, you ought to come see ours because it's the best in the state. So we really saw what we saw as a challenge as an incredible opportunity to infuse STEAM STEM and the things that are happening at some of these incredible high schools in our state in addition to all the wonderful things that are already going on at our high school in Morro Bay. So on the next slide, Ms. Holmes. Up in the right, if you double-click that, we would just like to show you a quick video put together by our kids. And our teacher, yeah, if you double-click that, it should go full screen. There we go. Thank you. Thank you. And I would be remiss in not saying that Mr. Jones is literally in San Francisco right now, returning from Carnegie Hall. And I have to take this opportunity to thank all of you for your support. I've been tweeting out pictures that Chris has been sending to me from New York and the smiles on the kids' faces. You made that happen for those kids, and I so thank you for that. So Chris was able to take his wife along as well, and I thought it was a wonderful reward for Chris Jones, who does an excellent job in his role as assistant principal for us. So he had a wonderful time himself watching those kids at Carnegie Hall. So at this time, I'd like to bring up Mr. Sean Allstott, who is also our assistant principal at our site and does a great job leading us in the area of technology.
Thank you, Kyle, and thanks, everyone, for having us. Again, I'm Sean Allstott, assistant principal at Morro Bay High School. I think that video just did a fantastic job in 2.5 minutes trying to show the great programs that we offer. So just the last slide here, just a day in the life of a ninth grader that we would hope for. Dr. Pruitt already kind of summed everything up. But essentially, they'll be exposed. They'll have opportunity to have a device in their hands pretty much at any time when they're on campus. Project-based learning, as you heard from Mr. Gady over here and Ms. Flynn, they have some really cool things going on. We're continuing to push that with all of our staff, and we have, again, we had 18 teachers volunteer to be a part of this project-based learning two-day training and 10 more going down to San Diego. So we're really excited about that. I think that's huge for student engagement and for encompassing all that we're envisioning at the high school. Students are going to have access to a bunch of elective choices like we just saw in that video that they can build upon. Hopefully some career pathways will be established through that. And then lastly, we really want our students to be invested and involved at Morro Bay High School, not only on-site but in the community. And that's also something that the project-based learning really focuses on, is getting the community involved in the classroom and outside of the classroom. So, again, we're really excited for what's to come, what's already here, and where we're going. So, again, we just thank you guys for your time.
There we go. Okay, so a couple of quick updates for our other secondary sites. So an update for Slo High. I asked them just for some of the current things that they're just right in the middle of, because obviously there's tons of activities. But they have a VAPA celebration going on. They talked about the art department had an open call out to students on campus, encouraging them to share their art, and they've created this amazing gallery down here that you can see displayed in the library. Skills USA, as we will hear from soon, 22 students from automotive engineering and metal fabrication in computer robotics classes have qualified to compete in state. So we will, I'm sure, hear from them soon. As well as 10 students will attend a state convention in Northern California for fashion merchandising. We have 85 students at Slo High on call for Guys and Dolls that will be showing in April, as well as a really neat planetarium show that Mr. Ritchie put on after attending a PBL workshop. He had this idea for his students to put on a planetarium show to teach concepts to the integrated science classes, as well as evening for parents and students and staff to attend. So really neat way to see that those PBL concepts are being applied. At Pack Beach, we have some great STEAM things happening as well. The sustainable agriculture class that I know you've heard about from Mr. Marinello in the past. They are working on their organic acre there, as well as some underwater remote control submarines. Skateboard building still going on, wind turbine construction, and I'm also working with him on looking at additional ways that we can incorporate career tech education options as well as STEAM there at PB. For LAMS, there's some neat things going on. We have 8th grade students have doubled their opportunity for electives this year. There's the addition of the computer-aided design lab that has been added into the industrial tech classes. 7th grade students on the technology wheel have a coding component that's now been added to that. There's an increased technology presence. You can see the exact number there from 220 to 560, and you can see the final bullet there that we're really aiming for that to be a one-to-one implementation for next year. So we're getting pretty close. Makerspace, some good clubs going on. Makerspace, photography, catering, coding, and robotics clubs are all happening there, as well as an increase in starting to look at some cross-curricular STEAM projects. So we've had some good examples of that at LAMS, as well as a robotics club, so competed for the first time this year. I will let Ms. Shields take care of the elementary portion.
Good evening. Well, STEAM learning opportunities are alive and expanding at each of our elementary schools. Tonight I'm going to highlight four particular schools who have really embraced some STEAM-based learning and developed a variety of opportunities for their students. I'm going to begin with Baywood. Is now in their fourth year of offering school STEAM clubs for all third through fifth grade students run by parent coaches. For the 15-16 school years, Baywood students can choose from human body club, entrepreneurship, yearbook, marine biology, photography, scratch computer coding, or drama. In addition, Baywood has implemented one-to-one Chromebooks in all third through fifth grade classrooms. They're using various Google apps and trying out some new tech toys, they tell me, such as Spheros, BeeBots, and Little Bits. And I'm sorry I didn't bring any of those to demo for you tonight. You have to go out to Baywood to see that. Principal Dinelli did ask me to invite you to Baywood's Art Science Expo. That's coming up on March 12th. There will be science demonstrations presented by Cal Poly engineering students, as well as rocket launches, drones, and lots of fun. Moving on to Sinsheimer, they have been embedding more and more STEAM opportunities into daily classroom instruction, as well as engaging STEAM-based activities before and after school. This year, they started a K-2 junior engineering class with a focus on design, process, and using Little Bits. They have added a before-school choir program whose 40 students meet twice a week. Computer programming coding classes also continue to develop with students using programs such as Scratch and Code.org. Finally, the Stinger Robotics program continues to reach new heights. They participated in their first robotics team challenge where one of their groups qualified for the finals, placing fourth out of 22 teams. All of these classes focus on helping students develop communication, teamwork, creativity, and problem solving. Oh, before I move on to teach, Mr. Martin did ask me to mention one last little thing. They just started a sustainability club where students learn how to be guardians of the future. This club invites first through sixth graders to learn more about the science of making good choices for themselves and our planet. So moving on to teach. Teach STEAM takes many forms, and we begin here with fourth grade classrooms working with Cal Poly professors to learn programming and design with Lego Mindstorm. Students now are programming their robotics to compete in sumo-style wrestling. So I will take you there and ask him to help me, and you've got to look quickly. All in the day of the life of a fourth grader. Teach recently completed, if you can get me to the next one. I need your help, Kim, to get to the next slide, please. Thank you. Teach recently completed a five-week session of elective courses that included computer game programming, origami, tapigami, jewelry design, 3D pens, theater, photography, kinesiology, drawing, programming for encrypting and decrypting messages, and dance. Currently, all classes are immersed in the creation of their innovation and exploration initiative projects for a school-wide competition. Cal Poly engineering students work with each classroom to help with project design. This year, the class projects will include a home desalination plant, water catchment project, and creating a shark locator device for harbors, to name a few. These whole class projects include designing and building a prototype, creating a web page, marketing materials, and finally a presentation for the Innovation and Exploration Showcase on March 18th.
And finally, we're going to finish up with Bishop's Peak, has developed a variety of STEAM classes that are offered to all students in grades TK through 6th grade. These courses include topics such as flight catapults, circuitry, stop-motion animation, the science behind ice cream, coding, theater, hot air balloons, and art. Multi-grade level classes run for 5 weeks and are taught by Bishop's Peak staff, parents, and community members. Bishop's Peak will be hosting their first ever STEAM Fair on March 15th, and Mr. Block refers to this event as BP is STEAM-erific. Is that true, Ms. O'Brien? Okay, that's what they tell me. This event will include math activities and mini STEAM courses for families. And rather than Mr. Block come here and tell you more about it himself, he sent me this little commercial that apparently has already been sent out to all of their families. So with that...
So there's some updates from our schools on progress with STEAM. And I'm free to answer any questions.
Okay, is there anyone from the public who would like to ask a question?
Emily made that movie. We're really sorry.
Seeing no one, will bring it back to the board. Okay, I had a couple of questions and a comment. My comment would be, when you look at all of the involvement we have with STEAM and STEM, and then look at the TEACH grants that were awarded this cycle, it's really interesting to see how many of them are related to project-based learning and STEAM education. So it's a real transition, you know, as I've watched them award their grants over the years. The focus is so clearly on STEAM and STEM and project-based learning. I question the dual Morro Bay High School, Los Osos Middle School principal's coffee. I didn't catch a date on that. I don't know if it's been established yet.
March 16th.
8 a.m.? Oh, I mean, 8 a.m.? Okay.
I'll make sure that gets in your Friday notes.
In the Friday notes? And
gentlemen,
then,
can you just send that to me? Yeah.
There was another...
Well, I confirm the date of March 12th.
For the Baywood Art and Science Expo...
Einstein. March 12th, was that?
That's confirmed for the 12th. And can we get that in Friday notes as well? Okay, so all the things, there's
we'll just check all those dates of special things that they told us about.
Okay, awesome. And could we include the DLAC that Mr. Robinette referred to?
It's this Thursday evening. Is it 6?
Okay, that one's probably not happening for me because I have a child's birthday. But maybe other board members would be interested in attending that DLAC meeting.
Okay. That's at the staff room at Laguna Middle School.
At Lambs. Okay, Mr. Unger.
Well, I was thinking about the relationship that Morro Bay High School has with High Tech High. It's really interesting because High Tech High is a charter school, and it seems to me that one of the, my understanding is one of the original intents of charter schools was to act as laboratories for educational innovation that could be brought back to traditional public schools. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, this is really great stuff. I don't know how many of you remember it who were on the board, Marilyn, you might have been, when there was a group that tried to bring I thought was probably a very poorly planned version of it here, and we rejected it because of their poor planning.
I recall that.
But what I see happening now between Morro Bay High School and High Tech High is just, it's great, and you guys are to be lauded for that, and the work that you're doing there is really impressive. Thank you.
And seeing no other comment, thank you very much. So we have item 9.2, proposed revisions to board policy 4144 through 4244, 41, 42, and 4344, complaints, a second reading.
Yeah, you can tell from that introduction that following STEAM, this is the most exciting part of the evening. We have board policy revisions. This is a second reading of one of our several different policies dealing with complaints that the board asked to bring this back specifically because you had an interest in seeing what the administrative regulations were attached to this. This is in our personnel section, so this only deals with complaints that either employees or applicants would have against the school district. This is not uniform complaint or other types of complaint issues we deal with. Is only that specific category. Most of it is strikeout language and some new language, but I think the real intent for the board was to be able to see how this is processed. So we've attached in your board packet the administrative regulations that would be going along with this board policy. Mrs. Holmes, you can maybe put the ARs up there because I think that's really what the board's interest was. And just with all of our administrative regulations, it really just takes the board policy and puts it into kind of operating terms, what we would do if we were to get a complaint, what the various steps are from informal to formal levels to appeals. And so that is attached for your review. But I'm here to answer any questions about that policy or the ARs.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Is this one that we're... This is the second reading?
It is.
Okay. Well, I would make a motion to approve if there are no comments to approve the proposed revisions to board policy 4144, 4244, and 4344.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor? Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. I'll entertain a motion.
We have a motion.
Oh.
I made a motion.
Oh, okay. I was at the coffee pot. So Mrs. Sheffer has made a motion. Dr. Eisendath Rogers has seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0. And again, Mr. Robinette, 9.03.
We have another board policy for your review. This is a first reading, so you don't need to take action on it tonight unless you'd like to. This is a new board policy that has to do with district residency, very closely related to one that we have had for years and years and probably the one I deal with more than any other single board policy, which has to do with inter-district transfers and open enrollment and district transfers. But this one is specific to district residency. So. Mrs. Holmes, if you can just pull it up, I'll go over the four sections on there. This is language from the California School Boards Association that we've just adopted. Basically, it's broken into the fact that we have the right to require documentation for residency. Secondly, that we can investigate when we believe that there is that somebody is not telling us the truth about their residency. What types of appeals would be in place if we were to deny someone the opportunity to come to our district because of residency? And then the last section has to do with the fact that there are some exceptions to residency, such as with exchange students, for example, in our school district. And we also have another board policy that deals with the McKinney-Vento Homeless Act that has, you know, loose residency requirements. So again, just like any of our board policies, this is pretty generic. The administrative regulation for this really goes into what the actual criteria for residency, what those criteria are, how somebody goes about proving their residency, and little further information about some of those things where a person would not have to give their residency, such as being involved in a safe house or a safe setting that no one is allowed to know the actual address. So those details are in the ARs. But this is a policy that we're really recommending having so that we can show to the public that we do have a residency requirement and various ways to verify that. I'll entertain any questions.
Are there any questions from the public? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
I'm just glad to see this coming forward. I know in our district, because of our financial situation, every time we add a student, especially a student from outside our area, it actually costs us money. And so I'm really happy to see us going into a more, what I feel is more stringent approach to this. So, unless there's other questions,
Mr. Unger.
I was just going to concur with what Mark said. I think protecting our students is utmost in our minds, and one of the ways we can do that is to really look closely at the residency of students. I know. Obviously, people are speaking with their feet. They'd like to have their students come to our schools because we have such good schools. That said, if they don't belong here, then they shouldn't be going to school here. And the other thing, too, is, of course, that the district that they should be attending is losing money from that.
It's probably as important before the board votes to know that our policy on inter-district transfers, which really is the one that embraces all the things about people from the other districts wanting to get into our district, you know, is one we use all the time. And one of the things that is unique in a basic aid district is that we are not required to honor what are called Allen Bill transfers. There was a bill before the state legislature a decade or so ago that basically said if you work in the district, you have the right to ask to come to that school district. Well, about a third of the county works within our school district's borders. And so we get a lot of requests for people to come to our school district because they work here. They work nearby. They work in our community. We do not have to honor those Allen Bill transfers because we can demonstrate that it is a financial hardship. And as long as you can demonstrate that is a financial hardship, we are not obligated to honor those. So I'm glad you brought up those points.
Well, if we ever fall into revenue limit status, then we're going to be
open
welcoming
arms.
Folks.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
So if there's no other comments, I'd like to move approval. Board policy 5111.1.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
That passes unanimously. Item 9.04. Mrs. Newland, this is an item to approve an increase to certificated substitute salary schedule for a home hospital and adult ed hourly instructors.
Yes, so first of all, I think all of our employees would like to say thank you because yesterday was the day that they got their checks with the 2% added into their paychecks. So I know I heard people saying thank you quite a bit today on and they'll be receiving their mid-month retro check coming up here in a couple of weeks. But this is following along that same vein. We have adult school teachers as well, and they're starting a new session. And so we are recommending that the adult school teachers and then also our home hospital teachers, which are hourly teachers, receive the same 2% that we've given to all of our other employee groups. And so it's just a change to those two that are attached to the salary schedule.
Okay. Any comment from the public? Bring it back. Is there any board comment? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move approval of the salary increase for certificate subs, salary schedule from home hospital and adult and hourly instructors.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay, we move on now to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item 10.01, approved. Okay. And 10.02, disposition of surplus property. 10.03, acceptance of donations. .04, approval of warrants and payroll. .05, approval of out-of-state field trip, Morro Bay High School concert band to Zephyr Cove, Nevada. Item 10.06, approval of foreign exchange organizations. Okay, then I'm looking for a motion to approve 10.02 and 10.04 through 10.06.
I make that motion.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So that passes unanimously. 10.01 was pulled simultaneously, I believe, by Mr. Unger, and I think it was Mr. Questenberry. So, Mr. Unger, you want to go first?
Sure. I just wanted to say, draw everybody's attention to the number of retirements that we have on here. Really, I can't even guess how many hundreds of years worth of experience and teachers that we all know and teachers that we're going to miss. Can I read the names, Jim? Did you want to do that?
Absolutely.
So, Elda Avery, Kathy Benedict, Gail Brocktrop, Wendy Craig, Paula Dishon, Gail Goodman, Debbie Heck, Dale Overland, Karen Sharp, Gordon Snap, Cindy Vicks, and Colleen Wall. We're losing an amazing amount of teaching expertise, and not only teaching expertise, but just great people, and it's going to be really hard to replace them.
Well, yay, and I'll second that sentiment.
Okay. So I'm looking for a motion.
I move approval of the item 10.1.
And I'll second that.
Motion by Mr. Questenberry and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. And then item 10.3 was pulled by Mrs. Sheffer.
I was just looking through the donations that
There now it came on. I wanted to take a moment and just remind people that there are some pretty completely painless ways to benefit our schools. I'm noticing that many of our donations this time are from the Target Take Charge of Education program, and that's something where you sign up every time you go to Target and use your charge card. You can designate an amount to be given to the school of your choice, and also the old box tops for education. By saving those box tops off the designated products and taking them to your school where people will happily collect them and turn them in, it turns into money. So I know that many grocery stores do this and other organizations. So if people would take a look around and think of ways to benefit schools without really digging into your pocket at all, other than for purchases you would normally make otherwise, we really appreciate that. All the sites benefit. So that's my plug. And with that, I would move approval of 10.03, acceptance of donations.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. So we are now at the advanced agenda. Does anyone have anything that they would like to submit for that or discuss about that? Seeing no one, then we'll move on to reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
Well, it was a busy week in San Luis Obispo. I had a chance to visit Sensheimer and visit a kindergarten and actually do some assisting with the assessments that the kindergartners have to go through. And so I helped out with a kindergarten writing assessment, and the kindergarten writing assessment was printing the alphabet. And at about 40 minutes, I got through about four kids. It was so much fun. I haven't been able to do that with kids in such a long time. It was a tremendous amount of fun. But again, it pointed out to me just how labor-intensive those things are and how much our teachers work to try to get that all done, and especially get them done in time for the grading period. Today I had a great visit at San Luis High, Lisa Washmuth, who is she's the Tiny Tiger preschool teacher. She teaches their fashion design class. She invited me over to see what they're doing in their fashion class, and it was kind of like watching Project Runway, only they weren't nasty to each other. So I got to go in there and spend some time in there, and it was really fun to see what was going on there. And I got to go into Nancy Dietrich's class, who's a special education teacher there, and she was doing an algebra lesson for her resource class, and I will tell you that they understood more about math than I certainly do. I got to stop in Mr. Simon's class, and they were about to complete an assignment on Wuthering Heights. And then Mrs. Bogus' class, I stopped in there too and visited with her. It was really fun. Along with several of you others who I'm sure you'll mention it, I got to go to the parts of the LCAP meeting at San Luis High and Morro Bay High with the students, and that was just a really good experience to hear from the students and to hear what their concerns are and how they think what's working and what's not working for them, you know. And then lastly today I got to go to Hawthorne and do Read Across America. That was yesterday. That was yesterday. I forgot. And it was just great. I got to read to a sixth grade class, and I got to read one of my favorite books to them, and or part of one of my favorite books. And I would just encourage everybody to do it. Get out there and read.
Thank you, Mr. Quesenberry.
Well, mine are not necessarily directly related with all this visiting our school sites, but I did have a chance to take the Rotary Exchange student, Jorge Montes de Oca, who is attending Morro Bay High School and doing quite well and enjoying his year there. We did go to the Cal Poly women's basketball game on Saturday, and he was thrilled to meet one of our former students and graduates, Hannah Gilbert, who is an outstanding player for Cal Poly. He was impressed with how tall she is, and I can understand that. And also, I had an experience I think that maybe Chris and everybody here will identify with. I have a niece who lives in Thousand Oaks and performs with the community youth community theater in that, and they put on The Wizard of Oz with the singing and the dancing. The thing that's unique about this is that She's been a special needs student in her past. She's now in her early 30s. But the youth theater group will put on a production such as The Wizard of Oz and before that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and all those things. They have a production that they put on for just these, you know, young thespians, but they bring in the people in the community, especially those who have special needs, and they incorporate them. So they do a set of performances with those special needs people, and they do a set of performance without them. But it's fascinating to see how this is a kind of a mainstreaming thing in my mind, how well this is carried off and how well the students perform. The Dorothy in the production was a student that had a slight speech impediment and so forth, but did a wonderful job of Dorothy and singing and dancing and all that. And my niece was the Cowardly Lion, and I'm pleased to say that she gave a tremendous performance. But the takeaway from that is, including those folks in your productions and the enthusiasm and the talent they bring is amazing. And I just think that this is the kind of direction that we are doing in our schools, that we're attempting to do in our schools, and what needs to be done more in our communities.
Thank you, Jim. Mr. Well, Buckman.
I wasn't sure whether I was going to report on this because I did get to take 2 weeks off from my work and from the community here. I did spend 2 weeks in Guatemala, high up in the mountains, visiting with the remaining Mayan community. And we did bring in quite a few medical supplies, and I got to talk with the principal and the teachers, all very amazingly similar to our principals and teachers, students similar. One of the things that I found rather amazing was on the wall of the school was the Character Counts program. And in some of our schools, you will see banners that say respect and honor and no bullying. And here on the wall of a school at the top of the mountains where the bilingual program is the local Mayan dialect and they're learning Spanish as their second language is the Character Counts program. So I was blown away. Thanks.
We're glad you're back. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I just wanted to say that Mrs. Roger and I were able to join Dr. Prater at LCAP sessions at Laguna Middle and Los Osos Middle and Morro Bay High, and those were amazingly eye-opening because we were able to hear directly from the mouths of the students what they liked and what they'd like to see improved, and that's all very helpful in helping us make our plans for the future. And today I got to read a Kinders at Hawthorne, which was really fun. And so I read The Kissing Hand, which they'd all heard, of course, on the first day of school, but it was fun to have them sort of reflect on that and how far they've come. And also, so since it was for Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You'll Go, which I said to them, you know, this might be a little, you know, more complicated. I think it's one of the more complex Dr. Seuss books. What do you think this book's about? And one of the little kinders said, like, duh, you know, it's about facing your fears. I'm like, absolutely, right. So out of the mouth of babes. Very fun.
Okay, and then I would only add, and I can't remember exactly when I did this, but I think it was since the last meeting. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers and I attended the boardwalk at Morro Bay High School.
That's right.
Was it? Okay, and where we had a presentation about Navient, which is a program that students and parents are using to help schedule, plan schedules for students and look at requirements for college entrance. And it was a great presentation by the counseling department at Morro Bay High School, and something that as board members, it's good to be familiar with because it's a wonderful resource that we are providing to students and parents. So that, together with the LCAP presentations, is the end of my my board report. And if there's nothing further, then we'll stand adjourned. Thank you.
Do you know the score? The soccer score?